The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. It's a rare occasion. Hello. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment, and Fran or I might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below or on our Bicycle Talk Facebook page. Or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Are you a fast rider? Or do you, in your mind, do you think you are? Yeah. Today we will explore the idea of slow cycling, the rise of slow biking culture in a world obsessed with speed. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. And also, do you own a Peloton bike? Well, you know, if you do, there's a big recall on them. So I just wanted to point that out with you today, just to let you know what the deal is there. Let's see, I'm actually going to go right to it really quickly. There are, did you realize how many of these things they've sold? There's about 800,000 Peloton bike models recalled for faulty seat posts. So they're recalling 833,000 of their original series Bike Plus exercise models because of a seat post assembly that can break. There have been three reports of seat posts breaking and detaching, and two reports of injuries because of falling. So anyway, that's my big alert to you this week in my rant. I just can't believe they sold 833,000 of those things. Wow. Well, anyway, that's what it is. We're going to move forward on a positive side. Speaking of numbers, about 80% of local transportation referendums passed muster with voters last week. Yeah, I know. I wasn't here last week because I was, you know, running an election. That's the other job that I do now. I am also the registrar of voters here in the town of Mansfield. And because of that, I was unable to be here for the show. So you got a replay of one of my old shows last week by the looks of things. That's a little better, a little less glare. So anyway, just like I always say, you know, get out, say something, do something, etc., the whole deal. Yeah, it makes a difference. 80% local transportation referendums passed. Anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show. And I have to go here because we are here. The UConn basketball teams are back. Yeah, both the men's and women's have started their seasons. I got to go to a game last night. I'm going to another game tonight. And I know it's not bicycles, but, you know, it's local. It's cool. And that's what we got. So we won't talk more about that in the show, but we will talk more about that transportation referendum thing. Mechanical Minute and Bicycle Tips. Forget 28mm tires. The rise of wider bike tires is here. And if you ride your gravel or all-road bike on the road, you should pay attention to it. So we have a few more things to discuss today about bike tire width. I know I talk about this a lot, but it's really important, and it's really making a huge difference. So we're going to go there right now, and then we're going to go on to the mechanic of the day, Mr. Leonard Zen. And we'll talk about what he thinks about the width of tires. So this is, you know, it's no secret that I am liking and digging this this wide bike tire thing because, you know, the comfort is just crazy good, and everyone that I talk to says, yeah, but my skinny tires are so much faster. Well, they may feel faster, but that's another story. The 28C tires, which is pretty much the commonplace for most road bikes these days, that's there now. People are even looking at 30 millimeter tires, 32 millimeter tires, and you know, you're gonna see more and more of this happening, and there's all really, really good reason for it. So I'm definitely one who has noticed that the big change in going anywhere from even like a 38 or 40 millimeter range, and I use those on my cross bike, they're just much, much more comfortable. And the other thing is, they're being race tested, in other words, resistance and speed tested by a number of different facilities, and the results are kind of interesting as far as that goes. And you know, you may think that skinny tire is doing you good because, man, you just feel faster on it. No, you don't feel faster. You feel the road more on it. You feel every bump that you go over on it. And of course, while you're doing that, unless you're running a lower pressure in your tire, you're also making it it's just going to be a bumpier ride. It's just not going to be that comfortable. And when it's not comfortable, it creates fatigue over time, and that's not good either. And I'm a roadie. I've been riding on the road for my whole life, and that's what I really love to do, and it's a really cool thing. But, you know, going to a wider tire, it makes me think maybe I'm working a lot harder with this wide tire with less pressure in it. But I talked about road pressure in my last podcast and radio show, and I will continue to talk about it. The reference point is to go to silca.com, and they have a great little chart there. It's actually not a chart, it's actually you can put your statistics into it. I spoke about this a few weeks ago, and you put in your weight and the tire size that you're riding on, and the type of riding you're doing, whether you're on, you know, fast slick roads, or whether you're on gravel roads, or a combination of both, or chip seal roads, and it tells you what pressure to put it in your tires. And I think that is just fascinating, because I've been running 70, 75 pounds of pressure in my road tires, pretty much definitely 75 in the rear and maybe close to 70 in the front. And when I put my numbers in there for the size tires I'm riding on, I'm in the 60s, not the 70s. So, you know, there's something to be said about it. And of course, there's so much technology out there, and there's, you know, so there, the research shows that you want to go a little faster, you got to go take care of yourself with some comfy tires. Comfy tires are always good. And you know, this also is a reflection to the type of frame you're riding on too, I suppose. You know, the newer, stiffer, lighter bike frames tend to be a little bit tough on your body in general. The gravel bikes tend to have a longer wheelbase, which will give you a little bit more comfort as far as that goes. So the, you know, high volume tires are the new great tire to ride on. Gosh, when we started out, we were riding on 18C, 19C tires, really, really narrow tires. And I think about that. That's how I did all my bike racing on tires that size. They were tubulars, but that's what they were. And they were still really, really skinny tires. And I think about how much abuse I took. Maybe that's why my neck hurts so much. Actually, I did check into that. And my neck issue that I had was not created by my bicycle. It was probably irritated by my bicycle, but it was not created by my bicycle. So I think I can thank my mom for that one. She was the one with that genetic defect. Anyway, Moving on, I'm gonna go right on to Mr. Leonard Zinn, who Zen actually Z-E-N-N, who is the guru of bicycle mechanics for many years in many of the magazines. He wrote for Bicycling Magazine for a long time. He now writes for Velo News, and he's the kind of the question and answer man when it comes to technical issues. And so from his site on Velo, because he writes for Velo News, he says he's often pointed out that bigger tires roll faster and at the same tire pressure than smaller tires that are otherwise identical. Readers often don't believe him. And those same readers also don't believe that dropping that bomber pressure that they run in their tires will reduce their rolling friction. Well, he says he's sure he can convince some people, and he can explain this in simple terms: the reduction in rolling friction and the increased tire width. You can equally apply this reasoning to increasing tire diameter. That's why a 29er rolls faster than a 26er. So if you're on a mountain bike, you're always going to find that 29er bike with the big wheels. By the way, a 29er wheel is a 700C wheel. I've been promoting 700C wheels off-road as long as mountain bikes have existed. And then all of a sudden, one year it caught on, people realized, wow, these 700C wheels actually go over things better. Doesn't take rocket science. Cyclocross bikes rock. That's all I can say. The rolling tire resistance that's caused by the internal friction and the hysteresis, that's an interesting word, within a tire's materials, and two rough roads, small bumps, lifting the bike and rider slightly on each little impact. Look at, and then there's diagrams that come with this article that show diagrams from both Continental tires and Specialized tires that talk a little bit more about this. If a wider tire is made of the same materials in the same thicknesses as the narrow ones, it will roll faster because of the internal friction and hysteresis, there's that word again, which I don't understand, within the tire's materials will be lower. And because the surface imperfections in the road will be absorbed into the tire more easily since it has more deflection available, thus giving the bike rider slightly less on each little impact. So the go-to independent tire testing lab for the bike industry has consistently found that in its testing that fatter tires roll faster than narrower ones. And Leonard had visited a facility during a recent trip to Finland, and he was having some testing done for Velo News there. And the tire designer for Specialized says wider is faster, quote unquote, holds for clincher and tubular tires under the condition of the same air pressure. Will someone tell me where I can find a really good tubular wide tire in a road tire? I can get cyclocross tires all day long. As a matter of fact, I just got some earlier this year to put on my cross bike. But to get them for a road bike, no one's making a nice smooth tread fat tire. I want a 32 or 35 millimeter tire that is a tubular. Why? Because I like tubulars. Anyway, long story. I'm not going to go there right now because it brings up that whole old school thing, and people say I'm a old retro grouch and techno weenie or whatever. I don't really care. I like tubulars. They feel better. They feel nicer underneath you, for what that's worth. Anybody out there who knows where I can get a good 700C tubular tire, 32 millimeter or wider, that is with road tread, please, please write to me. Tell me. BicycleTalk1@gmail.com is a great way to do it. And I would love to hear what you have found, or if you have found this. Possibly they're only in Europe. That is a possibility. I'm not really sure what they're riding in the Paris-Roubaix these days, whether they're riding on a road tread or whether they're riding on a cyclocross tread or a mixed tread. It's hard to really say, but I just want a smoother tire that is a tubular. Anyway, so the. You know, there are a number of people who responded to this article, but you know, what it comes down to is the testing is telling us the same thing over and over again, and that is that the fat tires rule. They definitely are a better way to go. Now I'm starting to feel bad about the fact that I'm only riding on 28s now and not on something wider than that, other than riding on a cyclocross bike, which would take a wider tire. But anyway, that's the trend. That's where it's going. Here comes the hard part. If you own old bicycles, or let's not call them old, let's call them seasoned bicycles from the past, and maybe it was a custom-made bike that you just can't give up on because it's such a nice fit. It's just so hard to get away from that bike. The tolerances on that frame may not have been built for the fatter tires. So that is a problem, and that is possibly a reason to think about upgrading your favorite bike in the future. But you know, I understand if you just are in love with the bike that was made for you because it measured you and your style of riding, and so therefore, you know, that's what you're going to live with. I get all that, but you know, there's just so many cool new bikes out right now. It might be worth taking a look and seeing. And of course, you know, you can have more than one bike, right, Fran?
Yes.
Yeah, there it is. See, Fran has more than one bike. Quite honestly, the cyclocross bikes or the gravel bikes are just considerably more comfortable in general. Now, maybe I'm just sounding like an old guy here, but that's what I recognize that works for me, and a lot of my friends are also starting to make that conversion. But I do occasionally see someone on a group ride, and they are riding these ridiculously skinny tires, and I feel bad for them because they're missing out on the whole idea that they could be a lot more comfortable. These are usually the same people that are talking about how fast they go. And they think in their brain that they are going faster because they have, you know, the tires cranked up super high pressure. God, I remember when some of the bikes tires came out years ago, the real narrow ones, they were telling us we could put up to 180 pounds of pressure in the tire. Don't do that. Please don't do that. That's really not a good idea. And I don't care how big you are, how heavy you are, whatever it is, 180 pounds is you're never gonna ever enjoy your bike ride at 180 pounds of pressure. So don't do that. Please don't do that. So let's take a look at. So now we're talking about, and I said something about this earlier when I was doing my introduction. We talked about the rise of the slow biking culture in a world obsessed with speed.
Sounds
Speaking
good.
of speed, okay. so I hear it all the time. What was your average speed? So how fast were you going? You did 45 miles, but how fast did you go? What was your average speed? It's like, it doesn't matter. Okay? It matters that you got out and you rode your bike. And maybe you went 45 miles. Maybe you rode for 3 hours. Maybe you rode for 5 hours. It doesn't matter. It matters that you're on the bike. And it doesn't matter how fast you're going. And now what we're finding is there's a slow biking culture. Okay, that is happening right now. And you take a look at any given morning in cities like Amsterdam, Paris, Montreal, or even Portland, Oregon, you're going to find a number of cyclists coasting, not racing through the streets. These riders aren't hurled over, hunched over their aerodynamic positions or timing their commute down to the second. Instead, they're upright, alert, unhurried, pedaling with baskets full of groceries, bouquets, or maybe, you know, a small animal. It's all true. I see people riding with dogs all the time, and I rarely see somebody riding with a cat. I think a cat would get really upset with being on a bicycle. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are cats that like to be on a bike, but I think cats tend to have a little bit different attitude. So anyway, tell me if you ride with your cat while you're riding your bike. I wouldn't do that if I were you, but that's okay. Everybody's got their thing. So this is not a, an undertraining or inefficiency. It's a movement. The rise of slow biking marks a cultural pivot away from competitive high-speed cycling towards something softer, more intuitive, or fundamentally human. So what is slow biking? Slow biking is not a discipline or a sport, it's a philosophy, okay? One that values presence over performance and connection over competition. Unlike cycling disciplines geared towards endurance, racing, or technical mastery, slow biking emphasizes comfort, safety, and the sheer joy of movement. It's about riding in a way that leaves room for wonder, to notice the changing leaves, to stop for a chat with a neighbor, or take a scenic route home for no reason other than it feels good. In this culture, the journey isn't a means to an end, it's the destination. So, cycling as moving meditation. I've talked about this all the time. I talk about coming from, the first church of the spinning wheel is what I used to call it years ago. It is a meditation. It's a world that you go into that just takes you away from the world that you're always dealing with every day, whether it be work related, family related, relationship related, whatever it may come down to. When you get on your bike, clears your head, clears your mind, and it's sort of the yoga of movement. I'll call it that because I do teach spin and yoga classes. It just puts you into that zone of I don't care anymore. This feels really good, and this is what I'm going to do. And it puts me in what I call my happy place. And it always has put me in my happy place. That's why when I can't ride my bike, I get a little annoyed. And it's been a rough couple of years for me. Fran and I were talking about it on our show just about an hour ago. We started. She said, "Well, how are you feeling, Ron?" And so, I told her, about the whole disconnection with my bicycle over the last 2 years, just because of the fact that I've had these medical issues that have kept me from riding at the same degree that I used to be able to ride at. And I've fallen greatly out of shape. I mean, really, really bad. So I'm struggling with that, and I'm struggling with not being able to get out on the road. I mean, I ride indoors and I teach indoors, so it's not like I'm not going through the movement and all, but it's just not the same as being outside. When you're outside, you're within the world that's all around you, and it's just you get that just lovely feeling of being connected to nature and to your surroundings and even people that you pass along the way. And it's just different. So slow biking has clear parallels with the practice of mindfulness. It turns routine travel into an act of intentional presence. With no performance metrics to chase, the mind tends to soften. Attention shifts from getting there to what's happening right here. The rhythm of the pedals, the rustling of the trees, the sensation of air on skin. Psychologists refer to this state as flow, where action and awareness merge. It's meditative rhythm that calms the nervous system, reduces stress hormones like cortisol, and fosters a sense of groundedness that's difficult to access in a car or on a screen. We spend all our time on screens or in cars, and because of that, we're we're taking our central nervous system and we're taking it for like a roller coaster ride. And it's crazy, crazy, crazy. You can still do the roller coaster ride, but you can do it in a much calmer fashion when you ride your bike. So, you know, I'm the bike guy. I'm always pushing cycling. I think cycling is, it's a means to a very calming end. And it's, you know, I've said it often, if everyone would just ride a bike, the world would be a much nicer place to live in. And I don't think I'm wrong about that, especially as I read this article and I'm talking with you about it. Research shows that combining physical activity with mindfulness can amplify mental health benefits, including reduced anxiety and improved emotional regulation. Cycling, especially at lower intensities, is uniquely suited to this. Unlike high-intensity workouts that spike adrenaline, slow biking aligns the breath with movement and gently elevates the heart rate without overstimulation. So the mental and physical benefits of slowing down. The physical benefits of cycling slow are significant and well documented, even without the intensity of racing or hill climbs. Regular moderate cycling improves cardiovascular health, boosts metabolism, and strengthens muscles and joints, all with a lower risk of injury compared to high-impact sports. On the cognitive side, the effects are even more remarkable. A Swedish study tracking over 1,400 women for 44 years found that those with high levels of cardiovascular fitness achieved through activities like cycling were up to 88% less likely to develop dementia. What's more, in the few who did, the symptoms appeared 11 years later than their less active counterparts. This shows that the benefits of slow, steady cycling go far beyond weight loss or mobility. They contribute to a long-term brain health and resilience. Additional research links consistent moderate cycling with improved sleep, reduced symptoms of depression, and better immune system function. Unlike fast-paced commuting and aggressive riding, slow biking can be practiced daily without burnout or overexertion. It is sustainable by design. So, now you go to the shift in the urban culture. Slow biking also represents a culture redefinition of who belongs in a public space. For decades, urban cycling in North America has been shaped by high-performance gear, aggressive riding styles, and male-dominated narratives. But as more cities invest in protecting infrastructure and car-free zones, a broader, more inclusive cycling culture is emerging. Upright step-through bikes, wide tires, and accessories like racks and child seats make it easier for riders of all ages, body types, and backgrounds to participate. The emphasis is not on speed, but mobility with dignity. The result is a more accessible, relaxed, and democratic form of transportation, especially important for women, older adults, and people with disabilities who may have been excluded from traditional cycling culture. The bikes themselves reflect a cultural shift. Instead of lightweight carbon frames or aggressive drop handlebars, slow bikes tend to be upright, heavy, and practical. Comfort matters more than aerodynamics. Built-in racks, integrated lights, fenders, and enclosed chains are standard. These are not machines designed for performance. They are companions for everyday life. Electric assist is another key feature enabling slow biking to reach more people. E-bikes allow the older and less fit individuals to enjoy cycling without the strain of hills or long distances, making slow biking experience more widely accessible. With pedal assist, the emphasis shifts from effort to experience, from how fast can I go to how far can I enjoy. Slowness is a statement. In an age defined by speed, fast food, fast data, fast fashion, slow biking is a small act of resistance. It's a rejection of urgency for its own sake. It challenges the assumption that faster is always better. When riders choose to go slow, they're also choosing to be more intentional and about their impact, their health, their time, and their relationship with the cities that they inhabit. This shift has environmental implications too. Slow biking makes car-free lifestyles more viable and enjoyable. It enables short trips to be made joyfully without the hassle of parking, traffic, or emissions. As urban planners increasingly prioritize walkability and bikeability, slow biking is emerging as a vital piece of a more livable, low-carbon urban future. So we're going to be riding into a gentler future here. Ultimately, slow biking isn't about giving something up. It's about gaining something back. It's about reclaiming time, space, and attention. It's about remembering that transportation can be joyful, not just efficient. That movement can be healing, not just functional. That you don't need to train to ride a bike. You just need to get on it and go. The slow biking movement invites everyone, regardless of background, body type, or bike experience, to reimagine what cycling can be. A quiet, joyful, and deeply human way to move through the world. That's it, slow biking, folks. Are you slow biking? Are you giving this a try? You know, when I tell you at the end of the show, I say, you know, give it a try, park the car for a day and you know, use your bike instead, and you might just surprise yourself. You might just surprise yourself if you just slow down. Just slow down. Maybe that day that you have taken to commute on the bike or use it to run errands or whatever, Just gear it down a little bit. Put it in a lower gear. You can still spin your legs around fast if you want. That's fine. You can still do things that are really good and efficient on the bike. But slow it down a little bit and see if you notice a difference. Give yourself a break. It's okay. You don't have to be out there charging into the hard miles every single day. And remember, we've talked about this a lot on the show in the past too, that those rest days are actually more important than the hard work days many, many times. So keep your eyes open on that one too. That's my little discussion about slow biking I wanted to go to. I just thought it was a cool article. I couldn't resist. It's a different concept, and it's a concept that is enjoyed all over the world, and more so in the European countries than even here in the United States. We're just so geared to going fast, 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 and doing everything fast, fast, fast. And you know, it maybe it's not such a great idea. So two weeks ago when I did my show, I talked about what the number one city was in the United States for cycling, and for most progressive city for cycling. And surprisingly, the one that really caught the attention was New York City, number one in the U.S. New York. Remember New York? Do you ever ride your bike in New York? Have you ever been in traffic in New York? It was insanity. Absolute insanity. You took your life in your hands when you got on your bicycle in New York City traffic. Why? Well, various reasons. Number one, very congested streets. So you really had to, you know, like really ride your bicycle offensively defensive, I guess I'll call it, but you really did have to like really, really be careful. Well, New York has like, they've made some more sustainable transportation ideas happen in New York. So those at the very top of the 2026 World's Best Cities list are in three different countries: London for England, Paris for France, and guess what? New York City. And they are all leaders in prioritizing the humble and beautiful bicycle. As urban populations grow and sustainability becomes the central focus, the World's Best Cities list for 2026 just grows. So this is... The reasons are not only because the cities are thriving economically and culturally, but also they're setting a standard for creating living cities, places that prioritize livability, sustainability, accessible transit, active transportation like cycling, according to the latest Renaissance consultation report. These cities stand out for their holistic approach to urban development, combining green spaces, smart infrastructure, and innovative mobility solutions. Here's a closer look at the top cities on the list and how they're reshaping their urban landscapes. London, England. London continues to hold the top spot in 2026, thanks to the 2026. We're jumping here a little bit. We're still in 2025, but this is where we're going. Thanks to forward-thinking initiatives in transportation and sustainability, the city is doubling down on its green urban spaces and cycling infrastructure. One of the most notable projects is the Camden High Line, a mile-long park inspired by New York's famous High Line, which reimagines unused railway lines as a public green space. The city is also improving its public transport network with new metro stops on the Elizabeth Line and upgrades to Gatwick Airport, ensuring greater connectivity and reducing congestion. When I was in Chicago the last time for my son's wedding back in April, by the way, I'm going there next week too. I'm just going to go out and visit Greg for a little while. They had taken one of those High Line trains and they made a park out of it. And it's so cool because you're on this bike path and it's bike and pedestrian and multi-use basically. And you're on this path and you're sitting up really high and looking down over the city streets and neighborhoods that you're passing. Very cool. What a really, really brilliant idea to take and resurrect an old train line that wasn't being used anymore and make it into something that you can actually use for transportation or for general enjoyment and recreation. Really, really cool. So placemaking remains central to London's growth, exemplified by the high anticipated Camden High Line, reads a report. Inspired by New York's famous High Line, this mile-long elevated greenway is slated to open in 2027, symbolizing the city's commitment to enhance urban livability through creative renewal projects. And they are investing in cycling and transit. London's investment in cycling infrastructure has been steadily increasing with dedicated bike lanes and safer routes throughout the city. It's ambitious low-traffic neighborhoods program aims to make more areas pedestrian and cycle-friendly, reducing car dependency and improving air quality. So their cycling numbers are on the rise in a really, really big way because of that. And New York City is number two on the list. The resurgence after the pandemic reflects the city's resilience and ongoing investments in making urban life more livable, with tourism numbers surging 62.2 million visitors in 2023. New York City continues to prioritize infrastructure improvements, particularly in transport and housing. New terminals at JFK, LaGuardia, and Newark Liberty airports signal an ongoing commitment to modernizing the city's gateway. Something that I just spoke with one of my spin bike spin class participants this morning. My friend Bob had gone to the city and he said, you know, it was really interesting just walking around, but he said, I'm inclined to try to pick up one of those little city bikes and take it for a ride. Well, guess what? It's really, really hard to find an available city bike in New York City because it's become so incredibly popular. So, you know, now that is a good problem to have. If there's more people in demand to use a city bike, which is oftentimes an electric assist bike, sometimes it's not. They come in various types and models depending on what you're looking for. But if there's more demand than there is product to actually ride on, that's only going to make things grow. It's going to really make a big difference. So The other thing that New York is doing, which is interesting and something I've been talking about on the show for the last year, is they implemented congestion pricing. So the congestion pricing plan could help reduce traffic, creating more pedestrian and cyclist-friendly environment if it ever gets implemented. So it's been on and off because the folks that drive the cars and the trucks, they don't like congestion pricing too much because they get taxed for driving their cars deep into the downtown area. And although it's not that much money, they do pay a penalty for bringing their car in. Whereas if they were to have taken mass transportation, which is very good in New York, or ridden their bicycle and on these protected streets, which is also becoming very good in New York, they will save themselves that extra fee. Now, I understand that there are people that are working and they're wearing their fancy clothes and doing all that. But you know what? If you're in that kind of position in New York, you're making enough money to pay the tax. I think, anyway, that's just my own personal feeling. And you're going to find that this is the more people start to use cities and the facilities that they offer like this, the less people will be concerned with how well you're dressed when you show up to your meeting, especially if you're using a bike to get there. My thoughts exactly, but maybe not everybody else. So again, if you feel like you have to create a presence at work, and that's what, and you need that car to get there, then you're going to just have to pay the extra price. And it's not much. It's like, I don't know, $6 or $9, something like that, I think is what it is every time you go in and out of the very inner city. It's not very much at all, really. It's really a trip to your local gourmet coffee shop is what it is. So it's, you know, you can very easily justify that if you feel like you need to do that. And by doing this, they reduce the amount of congestion in the inner cities, and it becomes even safer for pedestrians and cyclists to be out there. So now we go on to Paris, and they've emerged as a global leader in sustainable urban development. When we were back in the COVID days, someone had sent me a picture of Paris before COVID and Paris during COVID. And it was really interesting because before COVID, there were cars jammed in the streets, and you know, you could see that it was basically unregulated quagmire is what we'll call it. It was bad. And you know, that's what happens when you put too many vehicles in a place that was only designed to handle less vehicles. Then there was a photo clip. Actually, it was an actual video clip. And the video clip after, when COVID hit, people were riding with masks on. They were on scooters or on bicycles or on skateboards. There were no cars present. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Paris decided to shut down inner city streets. They put up Jersey barriers and other fencing to keep cars out of the places where the people who were using human power to get around were going. It was tremendous. It was like an entirely different presence of downtown Paris. Really, really cool. So Paris is rolling out car-free zones and bike lanes as part of its vision to become one of the world's most bike-friendly cities. It's also expanding its public transport network with new trams and bus lanes that reduce the need for private cars while ensuring efficiency and equitable mobility for all residents. Number four on the list, Tokyo, Japan. Now, I've never been to Tokyo, Japan, but I have heard it is one busy place. Lots of people in a very, very tight little spot. So they're redefining what a modern, sustainable mega city looks like. The Japanese capital is investing in urban regeneration projects such as conversion of the Tokyo Expressway into a pedestrian-friendly space akin to New York's High Line. Tokyo's urban design integrates natural beauty with cutting-edge infrastructure, offering residents and visitors a seamless experience between nature and technology. Investing in cycling transit and transit. Tokyo's public transportation system is world-renowned. The extensive train and metro networks are constantly expanding and improving. The city is focused on increasing its cycling infrastructure with more bike lanes and bike sharing programs designed to make cycling a safer and more convenient way to get around. Number five on the list, Madrid, Spain. According to the report, Madrid is reinventing itself through the ambitious sustainable agenda that's transforming both its landscape and its identity. The Bosque Metropolitano, a 47-mile greenbelt, over 450,000 new trees, anchors a sweeping rewilding effort that includes new parks, expanding bike lanes, and one of Europe's largest electric bus fleets. Together, these projects are cooling the city, improving livability, and signaling a shift towards a cleaner, greener urban future. Madrid's sustainability-driven investment and its in its bounteous urban and natural assets is an ode to reuse and the conviction that everything old can be new again. So, meanwhile, Madrid Nuevo Norte, Europe's second largest urban regeneration project, will turn 570 acres of former rail lands into 10,500 homes, millions of square feet of office space, and a major transport hub. Singapore, all these just incredibly congested, enormous cities. Singapore has been constantly been lauded for its exceptional urban planning and commitment to sustainability. The city-state is transforming its waterfront with projects like the Great Southern Waterfront, which will add thousands of homes and vibrant spaces for its growing population. Additionally, Singapore's focus on eco-friendly public transport, automated ports, and smart city technologies includes to set it apart. And let's see here. So that's pretty much the top six in the world right now. Nice to see that the United States is actually on that list. Very unusual, I would say, in something I would not have expected to read about in the past. You're going to see that these big cities are reaping the benefits of making their cities cycling friendly, and that's all we could ask for. It's just kind of a beautiful thing. Many of the cities in the top 10 of the 2026 list are all invested in heavily into making their urban landscapes more sustainable, livable, and connected. Something any city that wants to be on the global map needs to consider. When I go out to Chicago this next weekend to see my son Greg, I will be keeping my eyes open to see what they have done since I was there the last time. I was fairly impressed with what I saw back in April, that they have definitely done some really cool stuff in Chicago. And I know that they've been really pushing that a lot too, because if you get the cars off the road, the city just gets to be a lot friendlier. It makes a big, big difference. So anyway, that's my piece on the cities. And let's see, what else did I see here?
It snowed in Chicago.
It snowed in Chicago. Yes, it did. Yeah. So the transportation, the things that happened in the local elections across America. This is my final piece here because I think I'm going to run out of time here soon. So transit won really big at the ballot boxes across America last Tuesday, promising U.S. communities billions of local support as federal dollars for shared modes fall under threat. Voters in communities as diverse as Yampa Valley, where the heck is that? Colorado, and Kalamazoo, Michigan, all said yes to public transportation on Tuesday, approving billions in new funding for light rail, buses, and more, as well as establishing at least one new transit agency. The biggest piece of pie came in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, which passed a 1% sales tax increase that will generate an estimated $388 million per year for 30 years for shared modes, as well as billions for road safety improvements, mostly in and around the city of Charlotte. So to be fair, it also included money for auto-centric uses, which was pointed out in an article called The Overhead Wire, and it was inserted by state Republicans who wouldn't allow a vote without it. So people are paying attention. The bill divided progressive groups, with some worrying about the potential displacement brought on by the transportation plan and questions whether it does enough for transit-reliant communities, as the Charlotte Observer had reported. Ultimately, though, the transit advocates like Sustain Charlotte persuaded voters that the tax would be a net boon for equity by helping transit officials build new light rail and streetcar lines. So all of this, when we start putting more and more of this type of transportation out there, it will increase the ability and safety of riding your bicycle in these cities too. So this is all really positive stuff. Things are actually happening in a good way. And when we're having all these cuts, these political cuts that are going on, and they're focusing on certain cities, and then you see these cities just, you know, taking it on the chin and going, forget it, we're going to do this anyway. This is all good news. The problem is that we really need federal tax dollars in which to do a lot of this. So it becomes a bit of an issue. And, you know, it would be really, really nice to be able to help those that are down the line a little bit more. Unfortunately, the current administration isn't real sensitive to that sort of thing. So, well, we'll just have to see. But the fact that these towns are and cities across the country are still passing really positive transportation bills is very reassuring. So anyway, that is what is going on. That's why I always say you got to get out and make some noise, right? Because it does make a difference. It makes a huge, huge difference. So be sure that you do that sort of thing. Let's see here. I already did this. And let's move on to real quick look at the Cyclocross Nationals, which are coming up on December 10th through the 14th in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Fayetteville, Arkansas, you say? Yeah, the home of Walmart. Yeah, Walmart and Bentonville and Fayetteville, all this. Well, Bentonville is actually, I believe, the real center of where Walmart is from. But they are into this bicycle thing big time, and they are really into building an entire infrastructure around them. They put in BMX parks, they put in mountain bike parks, and also are really promoting cycling and bicycle racing in a big way. So it's great, because obviously Walmart has some deep pockets which can help fund something like this, and it's really, really cool to see. What I was a little bit concerned about, oh, by the way, 30 days, 20 hours, 32 minutes, and 49 seconds away from the countdown to the Cyclocross Nationals. I did take a look at the course map because I was concerned as to what they might have down there, and I was not overly impressed because it clicked me over to a Ride with GPS site. Now, I haven't seen the course yet. I haven't seen any reviews yet. I'm going to try to maybe go onto YouTube and see if someone has ridden on the proposed course, because you can get a lot better idea about what it looks like, but it looks awfully flat to me. And that's not cyclocross as we know it up here in New England. Certainly not as we know it here in Mansfield Center, Connecticut. So we tend to have a very, very challenging course with lots of short, steep rises and difficult sections and off cambers and all. I'm sure they've done some of that there. I'm sure they have paid attention to it. But again, if you take a look at the elevation map, go to USA Cycling, and if you go to usacycling.org, you can go to the 2025 Cyclocross National Championships. And you can click on the course map and take a look at it, and it's interestingly flat, it seems. But we'll see. We'll see what they do. I mean, I remember when I was first introduced to the idea of putting on a cyclocross race in Hartford, and I met with the folks at Riverfront Park, and I looked around and went, this thing sits on the river and it's flat as a pancake. What am I going to do with this? And then I started using my imagination, and before I knew it, I had some really challenging and interesting pieces that came together to make it a really challenging and interesting course that went on to become a nationals course twice now. We've had nationals in Hartford, and you never would have guessed that you could take that park and do that much with it. But with a little bit of imagination, a lot of things can be done. And there's guys like me out there and girls like me out there that are very imaginative when it comes to cross. So we'll see what they come up with, but I'm interested to hear from those that do travel to the Nationals this year as to what the course looked like or looks like. Anyway, that brings me to the end of the show, and I am running out of time, so I've got to move forward here. Remember, if you got that Peloton bike, you might want to check and make sure it's not going to break on you while you're riding on it, especially if you're riding on it really, really hard. The Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series is still alive and kicking. There's two more races to go, both in November, I believe, both in November. And so let's make sure here. I got a page here that'll pop up real quick and we can take a look at it. And we are still looking at Moran Cross on the 16th of November and also the Orchard Scorcher on the 30th of November. So those two still have to go on. The Moran Cross is in Wallingford, Connecticut. The Orchard Scorcher is in Guilford, Connecticut. So, yep, here they come. We're getting there. And we've still got a couple left in our 7 series race. So please check it out. Finishing points. Give us your opinion. We always love opinions. That's good. Write to me. Comment, please. We can use that help there. And remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people because when more people bike, people are happier and healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can help more people know the joy of bicycling. Pass on the good word. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. Show up to a town meeting, make a proposal, talk to them about it, ask them what their plans are for the development in your town. And hey, take the Pedal and Ron challenge. Consider parking that car for a day and ride your bike instead. You just might surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or driving a car, please be safe and kind. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment down here below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com if you're listening on an audio version. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down, wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!